I am Plant on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. The Crazy Apes Film Competition is one of the fascinating events in this town. It's a filmmaking challenge where teams of filmmakers create short films in 8 days. Over 100 teams apply. 40 semifinalists are chosen to pitch in person to a jury of industry professionals. From that, 12 finalists then workshop their scripts with a professional story editor. Now, 6 winners have been selected. They'll receive $1,000 in a production package provided by sponsors in the local film production community that will help complete these shorts in the 8 days. The films shoot shortly, and joining me now is one of the finalists, Phil Planta, with Mayumi Yoshida. He is a producer of Gemini. Millie Mumford is the film's writer and director. It's described like this, quote, "In a very near future, two VR gamers coincidentally meet in real life and through their interactions expose the dark side of virtual reality and gaming." I'll get Mr. Planta to tell us about this project, what he might expect from the Crazy Eights process and his work in film. Phil Planta is a producer, filmmaker, and VFX artist. He's a graduate of the Vancouver Film School and Focal Point School of Photography. He has worked as a VFX artist for Once Upon a Time, Falling Skies, and Revolution. He was VFX DOP on Twilight, Breaking Dawn Part 2, and Big Eyes. He was also data wrangler on the set of Red 2. He produced the short films Contaminant and Final Wishes, both winning first place at the Vancouver Asian Film Festival, MAMM. He also produced Akashi, which won first place with Telus Story Hive and won at the NBC Universal Short Film Festival. And you might have guessed, because of the shared surname, we are related. We're first cousins. Visit crazy8s.film for information as well as tickets to the gala screening night Saturday, the 24th of February. I went to last year's event, and it's a marvelous showcase, lots of fun, and a great way to see some outstanding up-and-coming artists in the film community in this part of the world. Please welcome to the Planta on the Line program, Phil Planta. Mr. Planta, good morning.
Good morning, Joseph. How are you? Or shall I call you Joe?
Joe is fine, yeah. This is starting out well. I hope it doesn't get weird here. You know
yeah,
what I, mean?
I know. This is Planta on Planta on the Line.
This is the first time that I've interviewed someone I'm related to.
Yes.
So you're one of these 6 finalists, and it's been, from my understanding, such a big slog to get to where you are today. Because, as I mentioned in the introduction, hundreds of people have applied, right?
Yes, there's a record number, I think 238 submissions by video. People post their videos to, say, Vimeo or YouTube and send the link to the judges, and the judges watched, I think, something like over 14 hours of content pitches.
Yeah.
Where the filmmakers pitch their idea and their concept. And after that process, the judges whittle it down to the top 40.
Mm-hmm.
And we had to pitch in person. Actually, there were so many good pitches this year. They added 2 more, so it was the top 42.
Yeah.
And we were the first one to pitch. And from that, we did a 5-minute pitch with a Q&A. One of the, I guess, celebrity judges was Amanda Tapping,
an actress.
And now director.
Yeah.
After that round, they narrowed it down to the top 12, and we were named top 12, so we had to submit a first draft of the script, and then we went back for a workshop for writing, and we workshopped the script with a professional writer, and after that was submitted, we got narrowed down to the top 6 just at the beginning of January.
Yeah. And so, I mean, you think about it, 238 submissions. I mean, those are 238 ideas times how many people per team. And to make it to the top 6, I mean, it's a big deal, isn't it?
It's definitely a big deal. I mean, it's one of the biggest sponsored events by the Directors Guild of Canada, Directors Guild of BC,
and
as well as all the sponsors are all the biggest film-related companies or associations are part of this event in some manner or form.
And so you're going to get, in these 8 days as you film this thing, you're going to get help from these various organizations, and they'll all be part of it, right?
Yes, the Crazy Eights organization is fantastic for lining us up with whatever we need. First, they give us $1,000 to make the film, which is quite low. But on the other hand, they set us up with sponsors for costumes, sponsors for props.
Yeah.
And for example, we just looked at our camera package, which we had sent a list to Crazy Eights. And the total cost of just the camera and the lenses and related package to that was about $40,000 for 3 days.
Yeah.
So you can imagine, you know, just one set of lenses at $4,000 a day, you know, those we're using top of the line gear, industry standard.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
I guess that's what people don't realize, just how expensive this stuff is to make a film, let alone a short film like you are. That's why these films cost millions and millions of dollars to make, right?
It's incredibly expensive, very cost prohibitive. So for especially this event Crazy Eights has organized is really great for new filmmakers with, you know, they may have experience in film or they don't have experience in film or they just have a concept they just really want to share with the world. And this is a great way to get new filmmakers trained up and today, for example, we were paired up with skilled producers, skilled directors, and a skilled cinematographer to teach members of our teams and give them tips on how to shoot.
Yeah, and I failed to mention in the introduction the number of people who've done this before, and it's been, I guess, 19 years now. This is the 19th year of Crazy Eights.
Yes.
Who've gone on to
bigger definitely.
Things,
there's,
right?
There's lots of, you know, actors, established actors, established directors. And also, you know, not to mention, one thing that gets forgotten is the crew positions. You know, you could do a Crazy Eights and, you know, after that, it could be a kickstart for your career in the industry, in all these various kind of crew positions. For example, our cinematography mentor, he loves doing it, but, you know, he's working on Once Upon a Time, and there's lots of stories like that. Zach Lipalski, he was on the Steven Spielberg show On the Lot, and now he produces and directs, and he's definitely one of their, I guess, success stories.
Yeah. So can it be done in 8 days? I mean, it just seems like a frenzied panic attack every hour for 8 days.
It is definitely a frenzied attack. There are actually shorter competitions in Vancouver, like 24 hours and 48 hours.
Yes.
Those are what I would call nearly impossible, but
yeah.
8 days is possible if what I think the best way to think about is to work within that box. So if you have 3 days of shooting, then you might have to say, okay, I can only afford about this many locations and this amount of shooting. And you have to actually time everything from unloading the gear to, you know, what time the crew will eat, how long this one shot will take to light.
Yeah.
And then, you know, of course, packing up. And then after that, the next level of that is, for example, in our short, Gemini, we have a lot of visual effects shots, which is sometimes rare for these kind of films because it does add another layer of complexity. So we are right now budgeting time for 12 shots that we have to divide with three or four artists. So, you know, three or four artists working on three or four shots, you know, at least an hour of work each. You know, so we're really on the clock. You know, working overnight and basically getting that all to sound, and then after sound, you have to colorize the image to make it look, you know, perfect for the screen. And after color, then we have to allow just enough time for the sponsor for post. We call it post to finale post. They actually have to export it for, you know, delivery on a projector at the Center for Performing Arts.
That's the big gala night.
Yeah, the big gala night.
I guess that's your job as a producer, is to plan all of this and make sure that you're within the budget, whatever that is, right?
Yes, yeah. So we've set a budget and also contingencies, but also looking for sponsors. For example, we, yeah, asking restaurants for sponsoring food for the 3 days, and then all the way to trying to find VFX artists that I know, and you know, other things like, you know, even who is the driver for this day, and, you know, every little detail has to be measured and planned out, and things will still go wrong, you know, like somebody drops a lens and scratches it, you know, those things we have to kind of allow for insurance, and also stunts, you know, we have a, you know, a stunt in ours, and we have to, you know, get all that paperwork out to Toronto, and then it gets sent back and approved.
You must have a sense then of just how supportive a community this is. I mean, it's a big community because it's a busy community, film, television, and the sort. But when you're dealing with the people that are sponsoring this festival, you're getting a lot of help, aren't you? You're getting a lot of support, aren't you?
It's incredible amount of support. Paul Armstrong, who's the director of the festival, he's been lining up these sponsors for quite some time and building those relationships. And then, you know, even for us, we take care with those relationships, not to you know, overuse them or bug them too much. But the support from the team as well, like we have people helping us with casting, like professional casting directors, you know, so we actually got to go to a casting office and get that experience of being with a professional casting director and, you know, filming the actors and then also getting the actors to work against each other. That's something you don't necessarily always get on tiny little budgets for, you know, little films. And the great thing about this festival is, you know, right now we're staffing our film and we have now over 45 crew working for free, which is something, you know, it's very rare, but because of the legacy of the Crazy Eights, people and the live event, people want to be a part of that and be a part of that community and the love for film.
Yeah.
You know, when I met a actor the other day, and he was just saying, you know, it's so nice to see young filmmakers who are still excited about, you know, about doing this, you know, like, and I said, yes, you know, like, it's definitely like this year's Crazy Eights especially is, you know, they're very gung-ho, they're young, but, you know, they're willing to work, learn and work hard, so.
And so these six teams, are they all from this part of the world, like this part?
Yes,
of,
you know, you have to be, you know, part of the BC film community and, you know, also, obviously, you know, a resident or, you know, a citizen, I believe. And not everyone works in particularly the film industry, but, for example, one of the directors, he's a dance choreographer.
Yeah.
And he's doing a dance film with no talking. It's called Small Fish. And you know, they were looking for makeup artists to do the hair of the artists like a fish, like, you know, and that sort of thing. So, yeah, definitely it can be, you can be totally new to it, or you can be, you know, maybe a seasoned pro who just wants to try directing instead of their regular, you know, type of crew position.
Yeah, and I guess it says something about this community here, the artistic community especially, that it's not just film, TV, but you have to be nimble in various disciplines.
Yeah, you know, one of the interesting things I find about Vancouver is people are very multidisciplinary.
Yeah.
And they, you know, you might have someone who, you know, I had a friend who, she would do catering for small shows because she saw a need for that.
Yeah.
But, you know, what she does now is working on you know, big TV shows and in more props, for example, you know, so it's good to have, you know, especially if you want to direct or write, if you have another type of crew position, it supports your own filmmaking later on, because you can build those relationships and ask favors for, you know, like our producer, Mayumi, she worked on a show, Man on the High Castle, as an actor and a Japanese dialect coach. And so she's been asking crew there, hey, can you come for the weekend? I know it's your days off, but and you know, it's a holiday weekend, but, you know, it's a Crazy Eight. Come out and help us, and, you know, help me out. You know, I'll owe you a big favor. But it's definitely one of those community type of relationships and building within the community, the film community, that really helps us get these things made.
So I'll ask you about the film because I'm interested, mm-hmm. but I also don't want you to give away too much of it because we'll want to see it on the 24th of February. These two aspects of it, virtual reality and gaming. I mean, I've managed to stay away from gaming growing up, mm-hmm. and virtual reality is foreign to me.
Okay, but sure. That's okay.
but these things are coming to a head quite quickly, aren't they?
Yes, I mean,
everybody's gaming nowadays. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter what age group you're in. And virtual reality for a lot of people is the future, isn't it?
It is. And our director, you know, she's actually speaking as she's a female gamer.
Yeah.
And, you know, she's doing her master's in interactive. So it directly relates to VR, her yeah. studies, and she's been also...
Did she study robots as well?
I believe her undergrad was neuroscience, and
I see, yeah.
now doing her master's in interactive technologies. And basically what happened actually was she wrote the play. There's a great festival. It's called the Pole Festival, and I went there to look for content to produce.
Yeah, yeah.
And I saw the play, and it was about, you know, I had no idea what it was about. And our other producer, Mayumi, was actually directing it at that point, the play version.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just shocked because it was about these two people in real life who realize they've gamed together. And what's interesting about the film is it's kind of topical because we're talking about sexual harassment, but in a VR world.
Mm.
So it was very topical as, you know... hashtag Me Too,
mm-hmm.
and hashtag Time's Up, and relevant. And when I approached the writer, I said, you know, let's make this thing. And she came back later with me, and she's like, let's do the Crazy Eights with it.
Yeah.
And I said, actually, that's a great idea because it's so, you know, present in the media.
Yeah.
And
so it was a full-length play?
It was a 10-minute play.
Oh, okay, so, yeah.
So just it fit perfectly into the format of a short film.
Yeah.
So that's one of the reasons I sought her out, and, you know, I'm so glad that we're collaborating now.
Yeah. And so obviously this Gemini will go into the dark side of these things.
Yes, definitely, you know, like topics you haven't really thought about in VR gaming, as VR gaming technology is evolving, where you know, as the book Ready Player One that you're going to see coming out this summer, about where you can actually feel, you know, through these VR suits, you
uh-huh.
know, tactile feedback when another player touches you or you get shot. And how does that relate to, for example, sexual harassment, you know? And that was one thing that it actually caught me off guard when I was watching the play, because I thought it was really interesting. They're talking about gaming, and then it just takes a 180 into that. And, you know, kind of the implications of technology versus, you know, these real people using this technology, and how do these relationships and situations, how do we deal with them now in this, you know, coming VR future?
And so when you look at this stuff and you think about it, as you are obviously in terms of preparing to film this short on it, does it scare you at all, the future?
A little bit, you know, like, you know, I hate to think of, you know, how... social media and, you know, right now, you know, we're practically glued to our phones,
mm-hmm.
you know, that's our VR, that's our reality. And, you know, this younger generation, just, you know, how dialed in they are into technology, and, you know, just staring at a screen for hours upon hours. And, you know, what's going to happen when, you know, you're wearing those, whatever the version of goggles are in the near future, like the Google Glass version or something that's, you know, tapped into your brain directly. You know, it's definitely one of those things, you know, people don't know how, you know, it's going to affect our society. And that's why, you know, actually, you know, the producer Miami and the director Millie were all big fans of Black Mirror, because it's, you know, it's in the future, the near future, but a future we could believe.
And,
and it's very interesting in that way, and that also has heavily influenced, you know, how we're going about with the film and the look of the film.
And so in terms of the sets, I mean, you mentioned stunts and visual effects.
Mm-hmm.
When you put this together, you do get a sense of what it'll be like in the future. I mean, once we see the film on the 24th.
We want to keep it, you know, 5-10 years in the future.
Yeah.
Very grounded in reality. But, you know, you could see, like, for example, one of the things, one of our expensive pieces of set dressing to build was we wanted to have, like, a screen that's see-through, but we'll project images onto it. So it's like a floating glass LED screen.
Yeah.
So we're kind of recreating that effect. So, you know, we wanted to show, yes, people will be staring at these screens that can be anywhere or any size and just thin as glass. That's something that's happening now. Like, you can actually see these televisions in Las Vegas at the big, you know, commercial electronics, showcases and that sort of thing. So this technology is coming. It's not that far off. And same with the VR costume we're designing for the game is, you know, games look pretty realistic right now.
Yeah.
So we're keeping that in mind. Like, you know, they're always trying to make games look real or even hyper real. So, and, you know, having played VR, you know, I've seen people actually, you know, play a zombie game and get scared by the zombie and actually physically fall down.
Yeah.
And it's actually comical. You can watch those on YouTube, but it is, you know, it feels real. And
yeah.
One of the interesting things that relates to this project that got me interested is I went to Madame Tussauds in New York,
uh-huh.
and they had a Ghostbusters virtual reality experience.
Huh.
And we actually had to have, we wore the goggles, and when we walk through and play the game, and we're shooting ghosts and that sort of thing, but they actually built the set. You know, maybe it was just wood,
yeah.
but, you know, if I wanted to hide behind a couch, they had the couch in the room,
yeah.
and you could physically touch the couch and lean against it. And then when you walked into an elevator, the elevator shaked, but they actually had to have someone holding or walking behind us just in case we tripped onto those actual physical augmented reality objects.
Yeah, I mean, you're going into this excited and you know, this new world, if you will,
mm-hmm.
looking forward to it. For some people, it scares a lot of people, including myself.
Yeah, I mean, it's exciting, but at the same time, you know, what is it going to mean for, you know, how we consume content and how we...
Or even just interact with one
interact
another.
Interact with, you know, each other, yeah. You know, that's what I'm really interested in this Ready Player One film, because it's not that far off, you know.
Yeah.
Like, it is a future that could be possible.
Now, the 8 days itself, so you're accounting for every hour of these 8 days.
Yes.
Every minute, if you will. Are you going to find that you have time for rest and things like that?
There'll be a little bit, but definitely in the first 3 days. So the first 3 days we film.
Mm-hmm.
And because those days are going to be, you know, 12 hours minimum for crew,
mm-hmm.
We don't want to exceed maybe 14 hours at the most, but, you know, for us key positions of producer and director, there won't be much sleep just because, you know, after a long, you know, we're there to till everyone leaves, you know, say after 12, 13 hours.
Yeah.
And then we have to clean up a little. And then by the time we get home, we have to unpack and store, you know, the cameras, for example, you know, so they don't get stolen. And then we have to load them back in the morning, early in the morning, and get to set at, say, 7 a.m. So, yeah, there really is, you know, maybe 5 hours sleep each of those days. And then now that we've added visual effects, you know, we have to have a rough cut by the Monday, which is the fourth day, which is really fast. So what we're doing is we're actually bringing our laptops and iMacs to set and actually editing on the set.
Mm.
So we just so we can get it on the fourth day.
Yeah.
So yeah, the editors are gonna work in shifts.
Yeah, yeah.
So we're just trying to plan all that kind of work. Where can we work in shifts? Where can this person get a little more sleep? And then when we do work on the final cut, we told the director, okay, we're gonna camp in your living room. Is that okay? And she said, it's fine. But just, if you're allergic to cats, just let me know.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we're going to set up, you know, a fold-out table and chairs and a bunch of computers and just, you know, that's the exciting part for me.
Yeah. Because
it's so collaborative and, but, you know, so close. You're working so closely together. We have a joke, me and another producer, it's like, oh, do you hate your crew yet? Are you sick of them yet? You know, but, you know, that's what happens. It's, you know, closer than family for those, you know, few days, you know, and it's just trying to accomplish something, you know, so fast, you know, like usually just for posts that might take, you know, a month for a short film or 2 months, but, you know, we're trying to cram it in 5 days.
So I follow you on Facebook,
yes,
social media, and I see where you are and sort of the other projects that you're working on.
Mm-hmm.
This is obviously going to be a very scrunched up process for you because it's 8 days. But you, when I see you on Facebook and you're talking about all these other things you're working on, I mean, you are very busy.
Yes.
And so what's that like for one's personal life as well and one's family life?
It's challenging. You know, I do have, when I got into film, I started into visual effects. What happened was, you know, I started out in graphic design and web design because that was kind of the hot thing, although my interest was always in film.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, just being as a, you know, a young Filipino man, I didn't have very many, I would say, role models. I didn't really see people or know people in the industry that were Asian, let alone Filipino. So I was like, oh, you know, I'll kind of work in this film, not film, but web or online stuff. It's kind of related and I'm interested in it. And then eventually, you know, I got into photography. And from the photography, that's actually, I was like, oh, I want to take this to the next level and actually shoot films. So I started playing with cameras and shooting things. And I entered 1 year into the first Vancouver Asian Film Festival's MAM Movie Making Marathon, which is very similar, make something in, you know, 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, I got hooked into film and just switched into film. And, for, you know... My wife's very patient, and she's you know, we use our house or, you know, office as a set many times.
Really? Yeah.
And so she, you know, she's been there where we're, you know, yelling in the middle of the night in the backyard, or, you know, everyone's sitting in the kitchen talking or having a meeting. So she's been very patient with me. And, you know, just this Christmas, I actually... went to film in Japan and, you know, missed all of Christmas holidays. But, you know, she understands, like, there's these windows of opportunity for shooting, you know. And you know, I guess last year I had this chance to shoot in the Philippines, which was, you know, actually very, you know, my dad had just passed away. And, you know, to reconnect with the culture and my family in the Philippines was, you know, really, really brought more depth to why I love filmmaking.
Yeah.
Shooting in my parents' homeland. And,
and film could only give you that experience.
Definitely. You know, it's like when you're, you know, working in film, you know, you don't have all the luxuries, especially in independent film. And, you know, you kind of see how, you know, we were in very rural areas, you know, where, you know, our parents grew up. And you kind of see how they lived and learn how to appreciate. And, you know, I remember driving, we were driving to Bicol, the region of Bicol, to shoot in Legazpi. And I remember just looking out the window at the palm trees and just thinking about my dad. And, you know, it was very peaceful.
Yeah.
Especially after that, you know.
Yeah.
Him passing away just, you know, recently before in the year.
So, any other kind of job wouldn't give you that experience. Film has afforded you that. And as I mentioned, you know, I've seen the work that you've done heretofore. It's still exciting. I mean, going into these 8 days and just how frenzied and how sleep-deprived you'll be, it's still exciting?
It is. And, one of the workshop mentors, Tony Mirza, at the Crazy Eights, said to us today, he's like, you know, there's no rules when you do this. You know, when you work for a big Disney show or Netflix show, there's rules. They have a box that you have to work in, but, you know, just take risks. And that's what's exciting, just not knowing exactly what we're going to get. We try to plan, but, you know, on the day, there might not be enough time to get that, you know, fancy shot, you know, but you'll just see something in a performance, or they'll, you know, meet someone on set that you really connect with and just get along, and, you know, also building those relationships, you know, in the long term. But it's really exciting to me. I liken filmmaking to organizing a wedding with many brides. You know, it's just that rush of, you know, event planning at a whole nother level. And the great thing about filmmaking is you get to be creative.
Yeah.
You get to be technical. And if you like problem solving, it's one of the best things you could do as a career.
I'll bet, yeah.
Yeah, you know, it's like puzzling together, you know, so.
You mentioned a moment ago your background, yes. And I think this is a good place to talk about just the diversity that's reflected in the six finalists.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess Crazy Eights has done well in terms of reflecting the
yes.
community at large, hasn't it?
Definitely.
You're not the only Filipino I see.
Yeah, no, there's we have a joke on our set, or on our crew. We have three or four Filipinos and quite a few Asians, you know, mm-hmm. Japanese and Chinese. And we say we're the unicorns of the industry because you just don't see Filipinos, for example, on set, you know, either yeah. in front of the camera or behind the camera. So we chuckle at that. But definitely, you know, this kind of event for Gemini, we actually had a mandate of inclusion, so more women uh-huh. in key positions, which we actually fulfilled. And people of color, we've far exceeded
yeah.
Behind the camera. And now, I can't quite announce casting yet, but I'm excited to say that there will be, you know, a person of color on the screen.
So this is something that you've obviously been conscious about as you've started this project.
Yes, and just in general, you know, I don't want to bang the diversity drum,
right?
You know? But I think it's just important for us to think about and be mindful of, and there might be someone more skilled at that position, but you know, this is, you know, it's a contest, it's a festival.
Yeah.
In the end, it's just a movie. You know, like, we're all here to learn, and I'm also trying to set up kind of apprenticeships, like someone who's more senior,
uh-huh.
like our cousin Peter, who I got into the industry.
Yeah.
And he's going to kind of mentor some of the younger parts of the camera crew, for example. So it's a really good balance. And, you know, we were mindful, oh, is there, for example, a female second assistant camera, you know, we should think about? Or do you know anyone, you know, who happens to be female and, you know, in lighting, for example? You know, so it's not just, you know, the regular, you know, a lot of times when you see a crew or even cast, you know, especially cast, you know, there just isn't a lot of opportunities for people of color or, you know, or women in a, you know, these
yeah.
key positions. For example, if you look at the Oscars, it's the first year they've had a DOP that happens to be female up for, you know, cinematography.
In 90 years, yeah.
In nine years. That's insane.
Yeah.
That's insane.
And then I guess Greta Gerwig is the fifth director
yes.
to be nominated,
yes.
and Peele, Jordan Peele,
yes.
he's the fifth African-American,
yeah.
fifth black person.
That's
in it.
Unbelievable.
It's insane, isn't it?
Yeah. You know, considering, you know, one of the things we learned, we went to the film I produced, Akashi, which
yeah.
won the Tell a Story Hive
uh-huh.
Grand Prize last year. We also won Best Writing for the film, and that was an even bigger diversity contest put on by NBC Universal, and
mm-hmm.
the thing they came coming back to us was diversity. We were looking for filmmakers, and we want to exploit you
mm-hmm.
in the best way,
mm-hmm.
but we want your stories, and we want your voices as writers of color, and inclusion as well, you know, female female filmmakers, that's you know, something they're looking for as well, because you have these TV shows, for example, HBO's Insecure, you know, that was a web series, you know, this actress.
Issa Rae.
Yeah, she wanted to write something for herself that she, you know, she could relate to, and also, and that, you know, it went from a web series to an HBO series.
And yeah, it's one of the funniest things.
Exactly. It's fantastic.
And you know, I mean, it's obviously the black experience in Los Angeles, but beyond that, it's funny and it's entertaining.
Yes. It's very relatable. The great thing about it is the voice is unique.
You just need to have an opportunity for someone to get their voice out. Otherwise, you mentioned a moment ago about being interested in film growing up. I mean, I remember that. Now that you're in the movies, do you watch movies differently than, say, the average film viewer?
I would say when I rewatch films, I do. You know, I
analyze. Like, are you talking about the classics?
Yeah, definitely the classics. You know, one of the films I try to watch every year is Cat on a Hot Tin Roof.
Yeah.
Because I think it's just, you know, a master class in, you know, directing and acting. And, you know, even the way the shots are framed, it's just, you know, Sound of Music as well.
Yeah.
You know, I watch that. That's just a technical masterpiece on top of being, you know, such a beautiful film.
Yeah.
And one of my more favorite contemporary films is a film called True Romance by Tony Scott and written by Quentin Tarantino.
Mm.
And I remember those kind of films, just watching them and you know, it switches something on in your head. And that's what, you know, kind of lit the fire in me to be interested in filmmaking. You know, not just watching films. You know, I'm definitely a big, you know, film geek. But, you know, when it comes to the filmmaking end, it's, you know, it's, I'm always researching cameras and what was this shot on and what kind of lighting did they use. And, you know, for example, Steven Soderbergh's shooting on iPhones now. And
yeah.
I just find that part of the industry really fascinating as well.
So would you then go back and, like, would you learn more about Greg Toland, for example, because you're interested in cameras?
Mm-hmm.
And you would go find out more about one's life?
I research, you know, the most recent cinematographer, you know, I've been kind of researching is, you know, Roger Deakins, you know, hasn't won a
Academy Award. Like 19 or something like that?
So many times, and amazing films, and he's such a journeyman, and I've been watching old interviews of him or Christopher Doyle, the famous Hong Kong cinematographer. And, you know, I'm a huge fan of Wong Kar-wai, so I love reading about his story. Or Ang Lee, you know, like, he started making films when he was 40, in his 40s, you know, his first film in his 40s, you know, he was just coming, you know, raising his children and started to get into it. So that's, for me, being a little bit older, you know, of a filmmaker of a certain vintage.
Yeah,
you know, it's inspiring to me.
Yeah, Lee is fascinating because he I guess he'd done films in Hong Kong, in Asia, and then, like, his first, one of his big, like, English language films was Sense and Sensibility.
Yes.
And, I mean, to go from, say, an Asian background and then have to direct Jane Austen, I mean, it's fascinating, amazing. You know?
Yeah, you know, and if you watch some of his early films, you can see he has just a great technique, you know, obviously working with actors, but just his sense of bringing emotion to the screen is really, you know, just so strong. Like, that's the thing, you know, when there's so many shows now, especially that we call this, you know, almost like a golden age of
TV,
television,
yeah.
Right? I'm always looking for something I can feel. You know, when I watch it, it could not look good, but if I don't, if I feel something, that doesn't matter.
Yeah.
You know, like, I almost don't care about, you know, all the technical aspects, but if I feel something when I watch it, you know, whether that be from the images, the way they, you know, show the images, or the actors, you know, that's what's so great. There's so many things to choose from. You couldn't finish it in your whole life right now.
So I watched The 400 Blows about a day or so ago. borrowed it from the library. And I figured that I should watch all the, you know, I should watch Fellini, I should watch Ingmar Bergman, because I've watched mainly American films mm-hmm. over the years, right? Mm-hmm. So then I started Truffaut, and I watched Day for Night, which I really liked mm-hmm. about a year ago, and then The Lost Metro. So 400 Blows apparently is his greatest film. Mm-hmm. And I didn't like it that much.
You know, that's the thing, you know, you could go to any era and you know, rewatch a film that people remember
yeah.
as, you know, being amazing. But I think some of those films, you know, it's better if you watch it as a film study, mm. you know, because not everything is for everybody, and that's okay. You know, if you look at the director, Nicholas Winding Refn, you know, he did Drive, and then his mm-hmm. his films after that were just so abstract, but they find an audience. You know, it's just not for everybody.
Yeah,
and they're very divisive. You know, he was booed in Cannes, but you know, he's finding funding, and he's just doing. You know, he's past that point of trying to make something commercial, and that's okay. You know, like it can be a film study or for a certain type of film audience, which is great because we need those choices. We don't need blockbusters all the time. Yeah. I love blockbusters, don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
But, you know, just having those different types of films and, you know, one of my friends who I shot in the Philippines, Kevin Ang, the director, he put me onto Filipino films.
Uh-huh.
And we went to the cinema and actually watched a film made by...
These aren't those romantic comedies.
No, but not the typical. Yeah, he's like, no, I don't watch those. You know, and
I mean, you can see those at Tinseltown.
Yeah, exactly. Right? Yeah. But he's like, no, this is real, you know, Manila
yeah.
indie filmmaking. You know, this is what you should watch. You know, as a film connoisseur.
Yeah.
You know, and I watched it and I thought it was fantastic.
And yeah.
That's the great thing. I don't know these things, you know, and same with, you know, Japanese films. I love Korean films.
Uh-huh.
You know, I went on, you know, I guess you could call it a binge of yeah. of DVDs or VCDs of Hong Kong films yeah. for a long time. And then also, you know, China films now, which, you know, I don't quite have the appetite for because I don't understand all the, you know, the humor, for yeah. example, or, you know, the cultural, you know, points inside the films. But... You know, I can appreciate how the films are made. It's not maybe not my cup of tea. That's okay.
Yeah. So, lest anyone listening to this think that I didn't like The 400 Blows. I mean, I liked it.
Mm-hmm.
I think I liked it more because I'd seen Day for Night before I'd seen mm-hmm. The 400
yes.
Blows. And then I understand just how, well, Truffaut is a genius in terms of mm-hmm. his filmmaking. Mm-hmm. And what I admire about Truffaut, not just about his films, is how much he loves film.
He loves film.
And then you see, you know, I mean, the two kids go into the cinema to and then they steal the poster at the end. I mean, you understand. I mean, this is why film is so special to this guy. And then you remember, yeah. you know, his conversations with Hitchcock and the sort. Yes. You mentioned a number of filmmakers already. Is there anyone that as you produce films, as you shoot films, that you're trying to emulate, perhaps? I mean, it sounds like a terrible way to question it.
No, I mean, it's so true. You know, like when we pitch films, we always say, this is a film that is Top Gun meets, you know, Karate Kid. You know, that's how we pitch films,
yeah.
which is quite hilarious to me. Or even TV shows, you know, now that that's become, you know, the new kind of, you know, in vogue kind
yeah.
of, you know, film industry now is
people just say yeah, Sopranos
yeah,
or Mad Men.
Yeah, exactly.
You
have to
something.
Have that reference, and that's
yeah.
okay. And to emulate something like you know, but yes, you know, like I think if for myself, you know, I like Wong Kar-wai.
Mm.
You know, I'm just addicted to his stuff,
mm-hmm.
just because you know when I first saw it, I was like, what am I watching? You know, and it just hit me. I was like, okay, this is, you know, I had been watching all these Hong Kong films, and then I watched this thing that was so different from everything else.
Yeah.
And it resonated, you know. And, you know, another example would be, you know, Luc Besson, his earlier stuff. I remember, you know, we used to go down to the Blockbuster and get, you know, 7 tapes for 7 days. And,
yeah.
And I think I just accidentally pulled this film called The Big Blue.
Mm.
And... I didn't leave my seat for, you know, the 2.5 hours or 3 hours that film runtime is. And, you know, I had to find out what else has this guy made. I gotta watch it. You know, just something speaks to you. That's what I want to be. You know, I direct a little bit, not a lot, but more produce.
Yeah.
But you know, I'm always like, what speaks to me, you know, and hopefully that speaks to an audience as well.
And so, are there producers that you look to? I mean, like, I mean, the big names back in the day, you know, like Selznick, and I mean, do those people? I guess we don't have people like that anymore nowadays.
Yeah, you know, it's more. I think the the producers you look up to are more like showrunners,
mm.
you know, because showrunners, you know, they're usually a producer of the show, and
yeah.
they're the guiding light of that show.
All the elements they're yeah, in charge know, of, right?
Yeah. yeah. Like, you know, if you look at you know, some of the great TV series, you know, like, you know, Breaking Bad,
mm.
you know, like Vince Gill, amazing, you know, and he comes from a writing background, and you know, he just crafts these stories, you know, and they're so good, and you know, now with the kind of prequel Better Call Saul, you know, it has the same tonality, but you know, it's, you know, he's working with, you know, someone else to kind of create a new type of story as well, but it's still in that family and tone. So those are people I really look up to, and you know, if I can plug a podcast, Writers Panel, for uh-huh. anyone who's in filmmaking, I highly recommend the Writers Panel, because it talks about how you become a writer in film, or and eventually a showrunner or a, you know, producer on a writing TV.
Yeah,
which is really unique.
It is the because I say the writer, the theater is the writer's medium, and then film is the director's medium. Does that still run true?
I actually would contradict that. You know, the one thing when we were at the NBC Universal Film Festival was the thing they impressed upon us the most, not only to the actors, the directors, and the producers, you uh-huh. know, myself. You know, everyone was asking questions. We met with Creative Artists Agency. I don't know if you're at CAA.
Mm-hmm.
And had a roundtable with them, and then also with Universal executives and mm-hmm. NBC executives as part of our prize. And they kept saying, write something. We're looking for writers, new voices, writers. And unique, you know, not, we don't need another Stranger Things script. You know, we got 50 of them the first year Stranger Things came out.
Yeah.
50 of those, you know. They're, and they have to read, you know, I can see the pain, how many scripts they would read of, you know, 50 things of, you know, 50 procedurals 1 year.
Yeah.
You know, or 50, you know, NCIS clones. You
yeah,
know?
Or the when vampires were, or yeah, zombies were
yeah,
big, right?
Twilight, or, yeah. you know, any of those kind of youth, teen type of shows.
Yeah. It's nice seeing you again.
I yes.
appreciate coming in to chat, and break a leg, as I say, and just all good wishes with Crazy Eights. It's going to be, as you said, fun, but it's yeah. also going to be tiresome. But you know, all these people get through it, and it ends up quite good, isn't it?
You know? Yeah, you know, if you look at the films that come out of it, that they're doing just as well. My friends from Cypher, which was a film last year, they won. Best film last night at the Vancouver Short Film Festival,
mm-hmm.
and you know, against films that had, you know, months to prepare, right? And that's what's amazing about this thing. Even with the time constraints, people still produce things that can win at major festivals. One of the previous years, Joel McCarthy made a film, I Love You So Much It's Killing Me, and that one at the Leos, it won Best Short, or Best Director, I think. And that's against, you know, some of the top shorts in our province. So it's definitely, we're excited to be a part of it, and just to showcase what we have and share what we have and be part of the community and be part of the Crazy Eights. So, you know, it's definitely, for me, it was always on my bucket list.
Yeah.
So I'm excited to be part of it.
Thanks for this, Phil.
Thank you.
Crazy8s.film is the website for more. Phil Planta, join me in person here from here in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Planta.